Welcome back to the Woodbury Report. I'm Lon Woodbury, an independent educational consultant located in North Idaho. All the interviews in this series can be found at strugglingteens.com, along with 26 years of essays, visit reports, and press releases relating to the network of private, parent-choice residential schools and programs working with teens and young people making poor decisions. Today is September the 24th, 2015, and we're going to talk about addictions and the addiction problems. My guest is Evan James. Hi, good afternoon. Good to have you here, Evan.
Good afternoon, Mr. Woodbury. Lon, it's an honor to be on your show.
Okay, well, the title, Addiction Vigilantes, and we're going to talk about that. Evan is the founder and president of Universal Crisis Interventions, and what they do is transports and crisis interventions for families with kids that are young people that have gotten way overboard in addictions on that. So what's the need, need for the services of Universal Crisis Intervention? What's happening out there with addictions and where families need your help?
Well, I love the I love the topic or the title of the show, Addiction Vigilantes, and I'll get into that in a moment. I know that, you know, vigilante has the kind of connotation of somebody kind of taking matters into their own hands, and for me personally, and my partner Tony Pilato, we have taken it into our own hands because of tragedy within our own lives. I lost my sister to the disease of addiction, and Tony lost a son and his brother to the disease of addiction, and therefore we have dedicated our lives to saving kids and hopefully not having them travel down the same path that our family has traveled down. I myself am coming up on 28 years of being clean and sober, and you know, lived a life that in many ways I wasn't proud of. But on the other hand, I learned that those experiences now are what's responsible for letting me help other youngsters that are in the midst of addiction. And as we know, and as we heard the other evening during the Republican debate, that addiction has kind of evolved to the most dangerous level that it ever has here in our country, and therefore there's obviously a need for what my company does. And what we do is we help families. We help families that are in crisis. We help families where they don't feel like there's hope anymore. And it is actually, you know, there's other companies that do similar type of work, and when they're contacted by families, usually the contact happens where the child or the youngster, even a young adult, is still somewhat functioning in society, is still going to school, is still maybe working a little bit, but their addiction is playing a role, and they're in a stationary place. They're living at home, or they're in an apartment that their family is kind of in contact with them. What separates us and why we think what the need of what we do is so important is that we don't work in situations that are necessarily uniform, where somebody is in a fixed location. A lot of times we are pulling loved ones out of crack houses, out of motels, out of alleys, out of situations that when they first got into their addiction, they had no idea what the escalation was going to be. Once again, going back to the word vigilante has the connotation that maybe somebody is acting haphazardly or without a plan, and they're just doing it out of vengeance to get revenge for something. That's not what we do at all. What we do is very methodical. It's very sensitive. It's very therapeutic. We work with the family at length. We sit down with them. We learn about their loved one vicariously through the family. We're a team. There's, you know, we have off-duty police officers. We have psychologists. We have private investigators. And together, collaboratively, we work together to find the best way to extract the loved one from this life-threatening situation, and that's done in a manner that's not so much John Wayne, it's done more like James Bond, but James Bond with a heart, James Bond with the fact that we have all, the people that are part of our team, have all suffered, you know, the slings and arrows of addiction in our own lives, or within our families, and therefore we do this, we feel, for the most noble cause, because we don't want the next conversation to be about a funeral.
I like
we want
that.
The next
I like that image, yeah. James Bond with the heart,
yeah.
On that. Now, what I was gathering from your saying, in a sense, you're working with the worst of the worst. These are the ones that are totally bottomed out and are hardly functioning at all. Is that correct?
That's 100% correct, Lon. Basically, other companies that do similar type of work refer to us when the situation requires, you know, these type of efforts, you know, to be mobilized, to be in the streets, to kind of be the last house on the block, to be the A team, to come in, the expendables, if you will, of intervention.
Okay, sounds like it can be very exciting, but can you think of an example of and go through a little bit? The family contacted you. The young person was totally out of totally into the addiction, bottoming out. And I think on the thing on your site, you talk about bottoming out. That's the key time to catch them, but it's also the most difficult. So could you tell? Is there any example of a recent case that you've dealt with that would show a little bit about what the situation is, how serious the problem is, and how you handle it?
Absolutely. So there was a case probably about almost 3 months ago where a family that lived in the Denver, Colorado area had a daughter who was legally of the age to make the decisions that she wants to make. She was 19 years old. But up until the point of 19, you know, she had been living at home. She had been she was supposed to attend a more educational college, a higher level educational college, but as she got involved with doing meth, instead she wound up going to a junior college, and at this junior college she met this young man, and this young man, I guess, wasn't the best influence on her. He was kind of a member, if you want to say, of a biker gang. I don't know if he was in the hierarchy of the biker gang, but he was certainly affiliated with them. As it turns out, the next thing you know, she has disappeared, and the family really has very little idea where she is for a period of time. But being that she's 19, and being that she is legally adult and can make her own decisions, there wasn't much they could do about it except, you know, pray that, you know, she came back home and that she got on track. They became aware of her addiction problem, but she was always resistant to getting any type of help in the community. And then she went off with this, you know, I call him a young man because I don't know his name, but they went off into the sunset, thinking that she was going on a ride that was actually going to be exciting for her life. Instead, she surfaced in Bend, Oregon, which is to those of us who work in the field of addiction, we know it as a hotbed of meth. And the family, through a treatment facility, got our number because they were at their wits' end, because she finally did get in touch with them and let them know that she was happy doing what she was doing, but they could sense and they could hear in her voice that she was not the young lady that they had raised. And you know, as a parent, you can tell when your child is in peril. So they got in touch with us, and basically we set up shop in Bend, Oregon, which is there's a particular area of Bend, Oregon, which is very well known for selling meth and distributing meth. And we set up shop there with an off-duty police officer, myself, and Tony Pilato. And through doing surveillance and through asking around a bit and showing pictures, we were able to find out that this particular biker gang basically takes over a motel in the Bend, Oregon, in this particular area in Bend, Oregon. And what we did is we set up surveillance there. And when we had our opportunity, she left with, and it was very, you know, these guys, they would not think twice about doing harm, certainly to her, which they were, and by, you know, by feeding her drugs and doing whatever they were doing with her once they were feeding her drugs, but also doing harm to us for trying to intervene and extract her from the situation. So it wasn't a situation where we could kick down a door, even though we knew which motel room she was in. It wasn't a situation that the family wanted us to involve the police, because if we involved the police, not the police that work with us, but the local police, she may have gotten in trouble, and that wasn't the objective. The objective was to get her into treatment. So finally, after a few days, we actually got a room in the same motel. After a few days of watching what was going on, her and the young man who took her from Denver up to Bend, Oregon, went to a local coffee shop, and they sat in there, and she looked like death. You could see abscesses. You could see that she had lost a tremendous amount of weight. You could see that she was wilting away right before your eyes. She was dying, Lon. She was dying. Mm. So what we did is, when she went into the coffee shop, we sat down at the same booth that they were at with my off-duty police officer, and yes, he did. He slapped down his gun on the table to get this young man's attention, and I gave the best speech I could, and Tony gave the best speech he could, that talked about the fork in the road right now, that talked about that she had an opportunity for this day to go two different ways, that we were a life raft to take her out of here, because obviously what was going on wasn't good for her. And the psychological effect of the authority that this gentleman thought that we had was enough to get him to back off and realize that he probably didn't want to challenge whatever authority he thought or he didn't think that we had to basically wish her well and send her on her way. Now, he wasn't a happy camper, but she seemed, on one hand, she was defiant at first, but on the other hand, she seemed to be relieved and waved the white flag, and we were able to take her out of that situation and get her into a program in Southern California where she turned her entire life around, you know, or is turning her entire life around, and she's clean right now. And, you know, those are the type of situations that we get into, and a lot of people say, well, you don't have the right to do that, or that's controversial, or who are you to do that? I don't know who we are not to do that. If that was your sister or your daughter, would you not want us to do what we did? And I think that's where the controversy comes in.
Yeah, I'm sure we could hear the stories like that very, very interesting all day, but we've already run out of time. So why don't you take about a minute, let people know of your how they could find out more about you, or if they wanted to talk to you, how they could get a hold of you.
Sure. If you wanted to get a hold of me and talk to me, you could get in touch with me through 888-975-SAVE, which is 7283. Or extremeintervention.com, and we also have a nonprofit organization to help fund saving kids that normally wouldn't be able to get saved. And that website is TAPS14.org, and that's the engine that we have for people to donate to help us go out in the streets and save kids that normally wouldn't be able to get help. Or if you want to get in touch with me directly, you can do so at extremeintervention.com or 888-975-SAVE.
Okay, well, thank you very much. We've run out of time, but I guess we're going to have to come back and do this another time going into this. But we've been talking with Evan James. He's the founder and president of Universal Crisis Intervention, and talking about addiction vigilantes, ? And this is Lon Woodbury, an independent educational consultant located in North Idaho, and the Woodbury Report. Thank you very much. Good talking to you, Evan.
Thank you, Lon. I appreciate it. It's an honor to be on your show. Thank you very much.